All right, let's go ahead and get started. For once, we're not saying good morning, but it was a great morning, except for the fall, but it's all good. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the ANF committee meeting for Thursday, March 19th, 2026. I am Chair Abdullahi, and this meeting is called to order. I believe Director Quaylen might be participating remotely. Not yet. All right, we'll come back. Other than that, Nicole, will you please call the roll?
Chair Abdullahi?
Present.
Vice Chair Rent? Vice Chair Kirschbaum?
Here.
Directors Acosta?
Here.
Douglas?
Here.
Hilliker?
Here.
Morrison? Norman?
Here.
Quaylen? Not yet. Roback? Sanchez, Serrano,
here.
Whitburn,
here.
Williams. Chair Abdullahi, you have a quorum of the committee.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Nicole. As we discuss the items on the agenda, I will be calling on directors who push their speaker button. Please limit your comments to matters not already addressed and state all your points when you have a chance to speak so we can move through our agenda. Are there any additions to the agenda?
There are none.
At this time, I'd like to ask if there are any public speakers wishing to comment on any item listed on the ANF committee agenda.
We have two. Calling on public comment for matters on the ANF agenda or within the jurisdiction of the committee, you have 3 minutes to make your comments. First speaker, last name, Hosler.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Heisler. I'm an asset manager at Liberty Station. Hopefully many of you have been there. Stone Brewing Company, Vaughn's, Trader Joe's. A lot of the properties that we own and operate down there are on ground leases with the former redevelopment agency with the city of San Diego. I'm speaking today. First, I'd like to thank you for all serving on this board. It's an important function for our society, so I appreciate that. But I'm speaking in opposition to your consent item 121, has a compensation agreement proposed by the city of San Diego regarding the former Naval Training Center, NTC, which is now known as Liberty Station. This consent item is based upon an appraisal that was recently conducted by the city of San Diego. It is as recent as November of 25. But read closely, the date of value is 15 years ago. 15 years ago, January 1st, 2011. The city was supposed to compensate you over a decade ago for this property. They've tendered an offer of their holdings of these ground leases that could be seven times less than property value today. We ask you not to approve this consent item. Let's take an analogy. You have a property you own and you've invested in. You have a property manager who's the city of San Diego. They're also your partner. You need to be compensated fair market value for that property in today's valuations. Your property manager and partner, the city of San Diego, wants the property. Your property manager has an offer on these properties or some of these properties that reflect today's market value that is seven times what they're offering you today in some of the properties. I have FedExed those offers to you, to some of the board members. I'd like to submit it for the record if I'm allowed to. Your property manager is not going to offer serious consideration to this offer. They don't want to pay current market value. They want to pay 1/7 of what market value is today, potentially. So your property manager has an offer to you in this compensation agreement with a quote unquote tongue in cheek, so to speak. They will pay you today for these properties for what they were worth 15 years ago. With all due respect to the board, and all the due respect to the staff, this is a bad deal for you. Although the amount is not very much.
Your time still, is up. Thank you for
still
your
not the right thing to do. Thank you.
Next speaker, last name Adams. You may begin now.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members of the Administrative and Finance Committee. My name is Steve Adams, and I am one of the, I work for the principal of the Seligman Properties at Liberty Station, and I'm urging you to vote no on item one, number two, number one. I have no oppositions to items parts two and three. The amount that the city is offering the water board right now, you know, the $2,742 is seven times less than what we have offered the city of San Diego, who is the property manager. We tried to engage them. We sent them the offer, and we don't even hear back from them. The majority of these funds actually goes to the school districts, and we feel they're getting shortchanged. We wanted to make this a win-win situation for all the stakeholders, which the San Diego County Water Authority is one of them, and for us to improve these lands and to help the public. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your comments. That concludes our in-person requests. If there are public speakers online, please raise your hand through the Zoom app or press star 9 if listening by phone. I see none.
All right, thank you, Nicole. I have no chair's report, but we do have few director's comments. Secretary Costa.
Thank you. Actually, I had a question if we could get staff to respond to the fair market question and the appraisal of that property value. That would be helpful at Liberty Station. Thank you.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm Chris Wojcik, the controller in the finance department. And these are, again, compensation agreements that come from agencies, cities within the county, and where the Water Authority is a party to one of the to the agreements in that we receive the proceeds. We're not owners of the locations themselves. We're just asked to approve of the transfer of these properties to within the agencies. And so that really is the limit of what our involvement is. We can either approve or disapprove of them. The I can say that what we do when we receive these agreements, we read them, we do look at the appraisals, we see, make sure that they include the appropriate analysis that was done. And then we look at what our share of the proceeds are with respect to how the county assessor's office determines what we were to receive. And then we present them to the board for approval. They're other than we rely on what the agreements state. And in this particular case for these three, the city has said that they wish to develop these properties themselves. So that's why they are not put out for sale. And our involvement, we don't really have much more involvement beyond that. There are 14 other parties that are involved in signing these. And I assume if any one of them disagrees, it would have to go back to the city, which potentially the agreement could be modified. But we really don't have that much involvement other than receiving them and presenting them to the board for approval.
Thank you. Chair, may I ask a follow-up question?
Yes. Real quick, Director Quaylen is participating remotely from a publicly accessible location included in the agenda, and he has posted the agenda at that location. So thus, votes will be taken today, will be a roll call vote. And with that, feel free, Secretary Costa.
Thank you. So I'm also wondering about the 2011 date evaluation. Is that typical? I mean, that was a long time ago. And as we know, property values have really changed since 2011.
Yes, this is something that was a law that was passed in the state legislature, and that is the direction that we follow. I do know the general counsel's office has looked at these and other ones involving the city, and it comes down to if there's a disagreement in price determining the value for the properties and the parties cannot agree, the default is to go back to look at the valuation of the property at 20 in 2000, what it would have been in 2011. And that is where we are today. And that's the value that what this these agreements are based on for all three of the properties.
And we did a couple of these, I suppose, about a year ago, and it was the exact same process. So they relied on the evaluation that was done when the property was assigned to the redevelopment agency. And we, as a very small percentage of refund proceeds, have adopted what the other agencies have adopted.
Thank you. I guess what I'm trying to understand is, are we required to move forward with this because of the redevelopment agency being dissolved, or is there any chance to reevaluate the property, reappraise, considering that it was so 15 years ago, so long ago? And as we all know, property values have really increased. So I'm just kind of wondering what the process is. I'm sure this happens all over the state of California. So I'm trying to understand. I just don't have enough information here.
Right. Yes. And again, we're not the primary party here. We are a recipient. The board can elect not to approve of this agreement, in which case we'd relay that back to the city and then wait for further how the city would respond after that.
Thank you.
All right. Director Madaffer.
Well, I guess I'm the old man in the room here. I was on the San Diego City Council when we approved the Naval Training Center transition. And we never intended that property, which then became Liberty Station, to be taken by a private developer. It was to be the future Balboa Park. It still is. And while I respect the private sector wanting to use this as a wedge issue, I respectfully disagree. I don't care if the value is 2011 or 2026. The reality is this needs to stay in the public's hands, and that's why the city is requesting it. I'm not a member of this committee, but I would strongly urge the board to support this measure. Thank you.
And just to piggyback on that, within the agreement, if there isn't an agreement by the parties to use some other valuation, then 2011 is the date. And so that's part of this legal process to bring the proceeds back.
Chair Serrano.
Thank you. To piggyback on what Director Madaffer said, I just want to be very clear with this board. It's been reported in the media that there are folks who are looking for the city of San Diego to sell parts, if not all, of Liberty Station. The city of San Diego is not interested in doing that at this point, and certainly not with what's valued here. But I would just say that the city of San Diego does want to move forward with the item today, and we would look to this board to support it moving forward. Thank you.
All right. Are there any other director's comments? All right. Seeing Director Molina.
I'm not on this committee, but as a representative of the district that represents Liberty Station, I would concur with my San Diego City colleagues as well.
Thank you for your comments. All right. Seeing no other questions or comments, do I have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Madam Chair, I'll move the consent calendar.
All right. And do I have a second? Second by Kirschbaum, and motion by Chair Serrano. Nicole, will you please call the roll?
Chair Abdullahi?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rant?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kirschbaum?
Yes.
Director Zacosta?
Yes.
Douglas?
Yes.
Hilliker? Morrison is absent. Norman?
Yes.
Quaylen?
Yes.
Robeck? Sanchez is absent. Serrano?
Yes.
Whitburn?
Let me ask the attorney, the general counsel, if I could. I voted on this at city council. Do I need to not vote on it here, or can I vote on it here?
That interest would be remote. Let's have you recuse. I didn't realize you voted on it.
Okay, I'll recuse from the item.
Thank you.
Items on the consent calendar pass.
Thank you. And then there are two additional items on the consent calendar. Can I get a motion and a second?
So moved. Acosta.
Thank you. And a second, please.
Second, Kirschbaum.
Thank you. Nicole, can you please call the roll for the remaining two items on the consent calendar?
Chair Abdullahi?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rant?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kirschbaum?
Yes.
Directors Acosta?
Yes.
Douglas?
Yes.
Hilliker?
Yes.
Norman?
Yes.
Quaylen?
Yes.
Robeck? Yes. Whitburn?
Yes.
Sorry, Serrano?
Yes.
The remaining items on the consent calendar pass.
All Thank you, Nicole. We have two presentation items today. First up is the presentation on the preliminary calendar year 2027 rates and charges. And before I turn it over to Good News Pierce and his presentation, I would like to start by mentioning that we are approaching the development of calendar year 2027 rates and charges a little bit differently this year. Staff will not be presenting to the board any forecasted rates and charges or a high-low effective rate increase until the May board meeting. The reason is that there are several major components of the rate development that remain in flux, including multiple ongoing water deal negotiations and the need to incorporate MEDS rates and charges, which have not been adopted yet. So deferring the release of the Water Authority's potential calendar year 2027 rates and charges ensures that the board and the public receive fully vetted recommendations without any confusion. At this time, staff will only be sharing current conditions and key elements to the development of the rates and charges, and we will get an update next month, but any rate recommendations will not be provided until the May board meeting. With that, I will excitedly turn it over to Pierce.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair Abdullahi. Pleasure to be here this afternoon. Loved the morning festivities that we had in that signing, and so certainly and hopefully more to come. For calendar 27 rates and charges, this is something we do annually. There are many in this room that have been part of our annual rate setting season year after year after year. There are some board members here that are also new. So wanting to kind of run through, and for those that may be listening, what are the parameters for setting rates? We do it each and every year, but how do we get to kind of the landing spot? And the first is we have a financial goal. We want to maintain a healthy organization here, that we have the ability to provide water, that we are able to fund the infrastructure that we need, the operational staff that we have. And by doing so, we can also borrow money at the lowest rate possible. So that's the financial goal that we have. We also want that the rates that we recover to be as low as possible and reflective of the service that's being provided. If you're taking treated water, we want to recover that from treated users. If we're using reliable supplies, we want those to be allocated to reliable water users. And so we want that to be reflected and ultimately have affordable rates. And the final piece of this is the operational goal. At the end of the day, we want to be able to deliver clean, safe, reliable water. And the ability to do that relies first with having the finances to do so. All of this, as we do an annual rate setting process, is a cost of service review. This is compliance from a third party consultant that looks at what we've done, look at the recommendations, ensures that they are being in compliance with applications of the rate methodology, adherence to the board's policies themselves, and any new regulatory or legal requirements. Now, while we set rates every year, your agency probably sets rates every 3, maybe 5 years. The rate development process itself is going to mirror what you have at your home agency. And that starts with the revenue requirements analysis. This is how much revenue do we need to bring in from rates to pay for the water, to pay for the treatment, to pay for the operators, to ensure that we have reserves and policies in place. How much do we need to collect from rates after we've collected our property tax dollars, as we've collected capacity fees? How much is left over that needs to be recovered? And this amount is going to change annually, based on inflation, debt, sales and water purchases primarily. Then we have our functional allocations. So now we know how the costs are being incurred. We want to split those costs into functional services. And so our costs very clearly go into a supply bucket, a treatment bucket, transportation bucket, and so forth. And that allocation, that process of our review is going to be relatively stable year to year. So there's not going to be much changes there behind, you know, the curtain, because structurally everything at the authority is staying the same. Finally, we get to the water rates and charges themselves. These are the rates based on how much we're going to sell. What does the rate need to be in order to collect that revenue requirement? The rate design itself is relatively stable, but there may be some tweaks here and there to adjust for board recommendations and changes. But the rates themselves will change annually based on that annual revenue requirement number. One of the big things for the revenue requirements that impacts us is external factors. And the biggest has historically been Metropolitan. Metropolitan, as you've heard from the committee before, has large increases that are being proposed at 9.5% in both fiscal 27 and fiscal 28. What that translates to a rate standpoint is a 10.6% increase on the untreated rate. The good news is we're not really forecasted to buy much, if any, water from Metropolitan. So that 10.6% increase doesn't really directly impact us or our bottom line this year as we have our reliable supplies. One thing that you will see is they've changed, much like we did with our transportation rate a few years ago. Metropolitan is implementing a 30% fixed charge for treatment. So rather than being 100% volumetric, they're now collecting 30% or up to 30% of their treatment charge based on fixed charges. They have three separate treatment rates that were adopted or are going to be adopted in this design, each having a slightly different component in terms of use case, but that's gonna be an impact. So you'll see the volumetric rate decline quite significantly this year from Metropolitan, but it's being shifted to a fixed basis. Met's two fixed charges that they do have are going up 26% and 23% respectively for calendar 27. That's the forecast we have right now. Those are direct pass-throughs to the member agencies. So we get the direct cost from Metropolitan and then no adders, no administrative fees, nothing like that. We directly allocate it back to the member agencies. And we look to do the same thing with the treatment rate. The good news in all of this too, and you've heard much of this with the settlement agreement, is we have a fixed exchange rate. That exchange rate this year is going up zero. So we are keeping the exact rate that was in place for calendar 26. That rate will be in place for calendar 27. As this is the kickoff, the overview for the initial rate setting season, wanting to kind of draw your attention to a couple rate component transformations or considerations that will be discussed throughout this season. First is PSAR, so our permanent special ag water rate. The board last fall adopted a rate that could be that this board could directly allocate non-rate revenue, so in this case, property tax revenue, to provide a discount to the PSAR customers that's above and beyond what was strictly defined as the cost of service. Since we're no longer buying Met water, we had to look at different ways to being able to provide that, and property tax was the option there. So this will be year one of us using that approach that was adopted by the board last fall. Transportation, when this was adopted a couple years ago, it was recommended from the member agency manager work group and the self-defined subcommittee there that the transportation moving to a fixed charge was a good idea, but let's not do it all in one fell swoop. There was a three-year phase-in that was recommended. And so this would be the third and final year. So the first year was 0 to 40, second year was 40 to 50%. And this year we would look to shift that up to a 60% fixed charge. So that final 10% increment, the 40% remaining would be on a volumetric basis. I mentioned Metropolitan's treatment pass-through. So that's something that we're going to look to do. So coming off of a volumetric rate, and this would be baked into kind of the fixed charge allocations that are allocated directly to the member agencies. We've heard this morning, and we have continued ongoing conversations about third-party water deals, deliveries and exchanges there. So we're looking to have more information as we get closer to adoption here in June. And then the final piece here that does relate back to Metropolitan is the supply reliability charge. If you may be familiar with that methodology, it's the price differential between our reliable supplies being desal and IID against the metropolitan untreated rate. Metropolitan, since they're forecasting a near, you know, a double digit increase, that's exceeding the increases that we're seeing on desal and IID. So that price differential is going to shrink. And when that price differential shrinks, the supply reliability charge is going to drop. And so right now that drop looks to be about 8-9% on the supply reliability charge, or about $4-5 million. So our fixed revenues will drop by about $5 million, but that $5 million, because we're revenue neutral, there's no longer that deduct from the M&I supply rate. So that is now going on to this, that $5 million will just shift to the M&I supply rate. So there's just going to be a little bit of kind of mechanics that when you see why are some rates going up, some rates going down, that's something to just draw your attention to. And that's something that we expect to see in the future as well, because Metropolitan's forecasting near double digit increases for the next 10 years. And so this is something that we expect that Metropolitan to far exceed the inflationary increases we see on desal and IID. As such, this has been flagged, and this is something that is being reviewed with the member agency managers, the general managers. Not that we're looking to make any changes this year, but hopefully looking for by later this year to have a recommendation out of that group for potential implementation in calendar 28. One final piece that doesn't get a lot of attention, but we're able to now do a full review, is our capacity charges. We have two capacity charges, one for the system, and then those agencies that do get treated delivery from us. There's also a treatment capacity charge. This is a one-time connection fee. So when you have a new development or you upsize your meter, there's a capacity fee associated with that. It's been some time since we've been able to do a full review, but now with the completion of the 2025 facilities master plan, we're able to do a full under the hood look of all of the assets, the capital, and using that to do a full review of this, rather than just having them escalate based on the engineering news record cost construction index. If you haven't noticed, the weather's been warm. Water sales, I'm sure, at your agencies are also going up. So that is good news from a water retailer's perspective. We will have to clearly see how the rest of the season shakes out, but this is something that we will continue to monitor, because the more water we're able to sell now, that just means we're in a different financial position by the time we ultimately set rates and look to the future. So again, we'll be back here in April to give a quick update on a member agency survey in terms of water sales that was performed by Water Resources. We'll provide what your member agencies are telling us in terms of purchases. We'll provide a quick financial update. And then in May, we'll look to set the public hearing, have a draft of the cost of service reports and staff recommended rates and charges there for adoption in the public hearing in June. Once that's all settled with all the new information we have in terms of the rates that will be adopted, any water deals that have been announced by that time, we will look to do an addendum to the long-range financing plan this fall. So all of that would be fully updated and reflective of the proposed debt issue that we also have later this fall. So with that, that concludes our presentation, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Pierce. Are there any questions or comments? Director Freehoff?
All right, thank you. I am not on your committee. Thank you for the presentation. So you mentioned in May, we will see numbers in regards to rates. And I know we're not discussing it today, but we will have some extra funds coming in. And when will we have that discussion is my question. Is that going to, obviously it'll have to happen at the April board meeting?
We haven't really developed the different scenarios right now. And that's something I think that we still need to work through. It could be that, well, it could be that other things transpire with other transactions. And so I would hate to get out in front of the public and us with having multiple confusing rate scenarios. So once the picture, I think, clears itself up, I would still shoot for May to have all of those different scenarios. If it happens sooner and we have the data, there should be nothing that holds us back from April. It's just sort of uncertain right now.
Okay, so it may come down to May when we actually are putting numbers out there that there'll be scenarios. Is that?
Yeah,
maybe. I guess I'd like the board to make a decision ahead of time on how we plan on utilizing those funds and then coming out with a number.
So what I what I have described to the GMs and the business model working group, and I think I've said to many of you that we're going to have just a different option so that, you know, whatever the financial benefit is from these transactions, you know, there's of course going to be one bracketed end, which is complete rate reduction, another, which may be zero rate reduction, pay off debt. So alternatives in between will find themselves as options presented to this board. So
okay, and it's still unclear as to when those options will be available to us, I guess.
May.
Okay. Right. Interesting.
Chair Serrano.
Yeah, sorry. I just wanted to piggyback off that. That, you know, I was just asked this question by a member of the media outside, and I shared with him that we would be having this discussion as a board through the rate setting process. I think right now, what I would ask members to start doing is having conversations at your home agency and start prioritizing from the brackets and bookends that the general manager just described so that you can come here understanding what those priorities are going to be. And then that's going to be a holistic board conversation that will continue through the rate setting process. Part of that is, as Dan indicated, we don't know exactly what resources we are in totality going to have for this rate setting process. I mean, like physically in the door. But I think it's just on all of us at this point to, you know, really have our priorities down for what we want to see, where we want to see this applied. And I would ask that we do that in context of short term, but then also long term. But I appreciate the general manager's commitment to having those scenarios in May.
And if I may add, and to manage expectations, if you're alluding to our excess revenue policy that the board just approved, just to be clear, what triggers that is actual excess revenue. So money needs to actually come in the door in order for us to determine that it's excess. So my understanding is we're not going to be receiving checks in advance of May. I'm looking at our CFO and she's nodding her head. So I just want to manage expectations that while the rate setting process will, of course, consider any agreements that are in place at the time of the process, the excess revenue policy requires on actual excess cash in hand on our books. Thank you.
Certainly can't count what we don't have yet. Director Norman, followed by Director Heidemann.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to just clarify, there's a special meeting, April 9th? Is that topic? And could there be another date between then and May that we could focus in on, maybe at a committee level, if not a full board level, to try to step, because things are happening so fast. You know, I just feel like we got to keep in touch on what all these actions are as they're occurring so we can have a better sense of what we might need to vote on in June.
Absolutely. We were just discussing that.
Yeah, me and Chair Abdullahi were actually having this conversation. I think that the April special board meeting is probably too soon for any kind of new information outside of what we just learned this morning on water transfer transactions. After that date, I think that there may be an opportunity. I say may because I don't know what I don't know with these deals. We do have a special board meeting calendared on the 14th of May, which would give us some time before the May board meeting. So I think that everyone should maybe keep that on their calendar. And we work towards seeing what kind of information we have. If we have something that is doable and can be presented on the 14th, I think that we consider that.
Thank you. Dr. Heidemann, followed by Director Madaffer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It occurred to me that I've heard this reference to the work that the member agency general managers are doing with respect to the Water Authority's business model. And I heard it from Dan just a second ago. I know Pierce referenced it. I even heard it from Craig Miller, the GM from Western, and even Adon, who I guess was the one who formed the group in Metropolitan, and the way they described it as it was transformational. So I just want to put a plug in that the GMs are working on these very topics and issues, and there's a lot of work that has gone into it and that is still forthcoming. So I hope that when we get to that point where that report is presented to this board, that we really listen to the advice of our general managers, because they are the experts of our agencies. And so I keep hearing this reference, and I just want to highlight that, because it is a lot of work that's transpiring. So thank you.
Director Madaffer.
I'm not a member of the committee, but I just, in listening to this, I think we just need to make sure that member agencies be careful not to try to burn a hole in their pockets based on the agreement passed today and what's going to be coming in the future. You know, this isn't the first we've heard about selling our excess supplies. So it's finally happening, but really, every agency needs to temper their exuberance to try to spend those funds. You know, we have long-term debt to pay down. I'm sure that Lisa Marie will talk about that in the future. And just keep in mind, paying down long-term debt equals rate reduction. Thank you.
Director Kirschbaum.
Thank you. I totally agree with Director Heidemann that we need to take our member agency advice into account when we're thinking about excess revenue. And the question I have for you, Dan, is will that timing match up? Because I'm hearing from the Valsetos general manager that they're looking like a year from now having a plan for a new business model, which doesn't align with our rate setting. So
right. I think that that's in general accurate. What I envision is that we do not try to cram in an excess revenue policy within a 6-week time period, right? And so that's my reference to scenarios that I'm gonna be asking Pierce and the finance team, alternatives, if you will, for the first year, for 2027. After that, I think that to your point, what your general manager described to you is accurate, that we would run that through the GM work group, have frequent touch-ins with this board, have touch-ins with our financial advisors as to what is a really long-term financial recovery type plan for this agency.
Thank you for that. And I think that that should go into our decision-making as a board, is that when we do think about how to handle this excess revenue that we anticipate coming in, that this is sort of just like a temporary plan for the next nine to 12 months. And so we should think about that as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments, Pierce or Lisa Marie?
Just in terms of that comment, these are complex agreements. They're 21-year agreements. And so I think just kind of thinking long-term over the life of the agreements in terms of maximizing the value, you know, it's a $100 million net present value to this organization in the next 5 years. That is, you know, that is an amazing tailwind that we have going into this conversation, but everything kind of needs, you know, the checks need to clear, the services need to be provided, the water needs to be delivered, and there are a lot of other changes. And we've certainly heard from this board during, you know, the years of conversations we've had on the long range financing planning, our commercial paper program, that there are still bills to be paid. And so we want to make sure that when we do provide those scenarios, that we're keeping that in mind. And so it's not just going to be a single year, this is what we can do, but we'll continue to provide that roadmap. And as I mentioned, we'll be looking to have that addendum to the long-range financing plan. So then when we do have those robust conversations, when we do go into the next two-year budget cycle, where it's a new budget, that we know exactly what we're dealing with, and that we have those full cash flows and those considerations involved for the next 10 years.
Thank you. Any other comments from directors? All right, seeing or hearing none, finance team, I do not envy you as you crunch those numbers, but I'm fully confident with so many things in flux, the leadership of my colleagues here, the leadership of our executive team and our finance team for to get us through the finish line. So we'll get there, folks. Next, I will hand it over to Lisa Marie Harris, our Director of Finance and Treasurer, to present the recommended debt management activities.
Thank you, Chair Abdullahi, as well as Board of Directors, Lisa Marie Harris, Finance Director. So as you all know, we've been talking about this for over a year, that we are going to be entering the market for a new money sale. And just as a reminder, we are out of PAYGO funds and we've been borrowing from the operating fund. So we do need to go to market so that we can start fully funding our CIP. So next slide. So as you all know, you all adopted the long-range financing plan, and it does present best practices to the market. I've already gotten great feedback from some of the key stakeholders. They really appreciate that document, and they're already running the numbers and assessing the health of this organization prior to providing us ratings. And just so you know, over the 30-year plan, the 30-year outlook, the plan does anticipate $841 million of long-term debt paid off. And that's outside of any water transfer. So the Water Authority has been on point in making principal payments for its long-term debt. And we also have been managing the short-term debt as well. And again, over that 30-year period, we do plan to pay down $102 million. And that's just with the overall ebb and flow with this organization. Next slide. So just to remind you of the overall portfolio, we have about $2 billion worth of debt. The majority of it is long-term debt. And we also have some short-term variable rate debt. And our annual debt service payment is approximately $156 million. That's 16% of the total budget. And that's well in par with our peers. It's nothing exuberant about our annual debt service payment. It's very normal to have that amount of debt service with the infrastructure-driven organization that we are. And you can look at water infrastructure, you can look at transportation, airports, that we all have large infrastructure programs and we all have to continue to issue debt to pay for our infrastructure unless we get to a place, and maybe with these water deals, Dan, we don't have to issue no more debt. I know he doesn't want me to say that, but next slide. Just to give you the horizon for the Water Authority's debt program over the next several years, we will be, again, we're going to issue new money debt, but based on the current outlook, we may not have to issue bonds until 2031. That's what the plan, the long range plan states. Again, we have good cash flow coming in. Again, outside of the water deals, the long range plan did not assume any water deals. And so even though we are a very infrastructure driven organization, we also have a strong PAYGO program. And the last time we issued debt was 5 years ago. And before that, it was 10 years ago. We were really in a capital intensive time period from 1990 to 2020. And outside of that, we haven't been issuing a lot of debt. So I know you all talk about we have all this debt, but it is relatively small in comparison to the overall infrastructure that we manage. And the profile for how we've been paying down debt has always been quite reasonable. We are very much respected in the marketplace. They really appreciate your leadership in how we manage the overall debt program. So I just want to congratulate you, and don't feel like you're being so not, you're being overly exuberant on not paying down debt. You guys are doing a great job, believe me. Next slide. This is just to show you that you did adopt a moderate risk CIP program. We were a more aggressive on our CIP, which means that we're paying less into our infrastructure. So it's about $100 million a year. And again, given that infrastructure of $100 million a year with the current rate setting process, we feel that we're going to be able to rely on this one debt issuance in 285, and we won't have to issue bonds again until 2031. But that could be further extended with your decision-making on the excess policy. So you might, in addition to just paying down debt, you also might have an option of deferring when we issue new money. Maybe we won't have to issue new money for another 10 years. So that's an option too. So when we're thinking about paying down debt, I think we need to think about it holistically, because if, let's say, our current outstanding debt is 4.3%, which it is, if the new money issuance costs are 5 or 6%, then maybe we want to extend when we pay down debt, pay issue new money versus paying down existing debt. So that's why I want to, we really need to think holistically as well as what our investment returns are going to be. So I'd want to look at current outstanding debt costs, the cost of issuing new money, what is the interest income that we can receive with the cash, along with the rate setting process. So we really need to think holistically, and I'm just encouraging and just planting these seeds for you as you go to your member agencies to process all these financial decisions. Next slide. So again, these key management activities include one, issuing a new money, two, to restructure some of the commercial paper program, and two, a longer term debt portfolio, and then refunding existing debt. We do have opportunities, depending on the market conditions, that we can refund some existing debt for a lower interest rate. Next slide. So the first key activity is to issue new bonds up to 285. That number can change up until we issue bonds. So we might decide to lower that amount based on water transfer numbers, but I'm asking for approval up to 285. But again, we can lower that number at any point in time up until the day of sales. And that anticipates a debt service appropriated in 26-27 budget. The funds again are assuming a moderate CIP and a portion of, and just to remind you again that we have been borrowing from our operating fund. And so we do need to issue bonds just to pay ourselves back. Next slide. The second item is to pay down some more commercial paper. And I know there's been confusion about we've never paid down commercial paper, but as you can see, dating back in 2010, we had a balance of 460. And incrementally, we have been paying down commercial paper to 228. So that's the current amount. And then I want to go to a hip pocket slide because there was a question about, well, how much interest have we paid to date on commercial paper? And that amount is $43.5 million. But the question really is, what amount would we would have paid if we had issued long-term debt? Based on the work that our financial advisors conducted for me last night, the effective rate that we would have paid would have been $156 million. So you can see the commercial paper program, which is why we've utilized it. We've been able to access the short yield, the short end of the yield curve, which is less than 1% in some years. And not only did we not have to pay the long-term higher fixed income rate, I was able to use our cash and get return on our investments north of 3%. So not only did we save approximately $113 million from not issuing long-term bonds, I also generated interest income by investing that cash to create an income to offset rates and charges. So again, it's a holistic approach. It's not just some one silo thought process. We really try to evaluate the maximum and optimum use of our cash using short-term, using long-term, but then also generating interest income, which does generate savings to offset rates and charges. Next slide. So again, we're going to look at, in working with our financial advisors, we are going to restructure one series of the outstanding commercial paper program. It's $98 million, and we're going to structure it into a principal and interest tool, and that'll be a part of the debt activities when we go to market. Next slide. So the last item is the debt refunding. Whenever we go to market, we try to see if there's any refunding opportunities. We don't just go to market just to go to refunding, just to do a refunding because it's still very expensive, but I can dovetail this refunding with the new money issuance. So we're looking at approximately saving $334 million, which is not that much, $3.34 million, but it's still something as we're going to look at that. We do have some Build America bonds that are taxable bonds. But based on the current market conditions, we might be able to refund half of that. But according to my financial advisor, they were going to market on some Build America bonds and it got pulled because the market just moved away. So we're going to continue. I am asking approval to refund the Build America bonds just to give me that flexibility that if all goes well, we'll be able to have savings on that bond transaction as well. Next slide. This is just to remind you of our strong ratings. And because of the long-range financial plan that was adopted, we're going to be positioned very well to negotiate even better ratings. And that's my goal. As you all know, we're still on negative outlook with Standard & Poor's. But with our improvement in our financial position, along with the strong methodology and all the metrics that we adopted, I should be able to, or we should be able to go to market and get that negative outlook removed. So that's one of my number one priorities. Next slide. So next steps is to, again, we're going to continue to monitor the debt management activities. We're going to come back in July to ask for the official board resolutions. And then you'll also be asked to approve all our market disclosure documents. I know our disclosure council presented that information last month. So it's the official offering document. And so we will be asking you guys to review that as well, review and approve it. Next slide. So the recommendation is to authorize staff to schedule debt management activities, the issuance of a new senior lien water revenue bond to fund capital improvement, structuring our Series 11 commercial paper program, and refunding of any select senior lien bonds, as well as authorize the financial team that's going to help us take this deal to these deals to market. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Lisa Marie. I will be moving to questions and comments from directors. Vice Chair Arendt.
Thank you, Lisa Marie. I'm encouraged that we are on top of it, as usual, from our finance department and looking for opportunities to restructure debt and so forth. One of the things I am interested in when we talk about the commercial paper program is the debt in that program segmented so that as we pay it down, we know what portion, the portions of that debt, how old are they, and how much interest has been paid, say, if you segment it into an annual basis. So if you pay it down $10 million, where does that go? Does that go to the debt that was incurred 5 years ago or 6 years ago? So is it, it's segmented so that we can track, you know, how long has that debt been there? What's the interest we paid on it? And then with future opportunities, I'm not going to be specific about what they are. I really think that handling our debt and reducing our debt, it may not produce short-term savings, but it'll produce long-term savings. So any opportunity we get for refinancing or restructuring debt will be really important. So I was wondering, do you have an answer for my question?
Sure. We do monitor and evaluate our commercial paper program. Again, we have paid down $43 million of that. And the staff has actually done some research to make sure that the projects, the useful life are fully amortized properly. So we do manage that. And again, we're halfway there with paying the whole thing off.
Mm-hmm. All right, Vice Chair Kirschbaum. Thank you, Lisa Marie, for that presentation. So I was the one that asked about the total interest on the commercial paper. And that question came actually from a constituent that reached out to me and was concerned about the short-term debt. I really appreciate this presentation. And I think that that graph was a great way to show actually how much money it's saved the agency over time. And I think if you're looking at just the commercial paper by itself, it can be like, wait, why are we doing this? Why are we doing interest only for so long? But as you stated, it's a holistic approach to the total debt. And I appreciate Director Arendt's comment about like, let's look at how much debt this is and how it's traveling. But I think you can look at it another way in that we have a total amount of debt at one time and how much are we paying on that? And so I appreciate your approach, and it's clearly saved the agency money over time. So thank you for that. And with that, I move to approve the motion.
I'll second.
All right. So we have a motion by Vice Chair Kirschbaum and a second by Chair Serrano. And we have another speaker on the queue, Director Paul.
I'm not a member of this committee, so thank you for the opportunity to speak. So for the last year or so, I've been telling you that I'm not going to vote for more bond funding. And I want to tell you that you've changed my mind. It's not your fault that spending's out of control. And I think you're doing a great, great job of managing debt. Thank you.
Thank you. We are very blessed to have you, Lisa Marie, and the entire staff in the finance team. All right, so we have a motion and a second. Nicole, will you please call the roll?
Chair Abdullahi?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rant?
Yes.
Vice Chair Kirschbaum?
Yes.
Directors Acosta?
Yes.
Douglas?
Yes.
Hilliker?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
Norman?
Yes.
Quaylen?
Yes.
Robeck? Yes. Serrano?
Yes.
Whitburn?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Thank you, Nicole. And we have another comment by Vice Chair Arendt.
Yes, I trust that Director Paul found out that the $285 million part of it will go to reline the crossover pipeline, which supplies the city of Escondido. Thank you.
All right. So we have two information items on the agenda. There are no closed session items, no further business. So the ANF committee now is adjourned. LPO is up in the next 5 minutes. Thank you, everyone.